for anything it does. You know, it is domestically producing things, you know, from knowledge all the way to the everyday commodities, right? It has the scientific power today to bring down the latest cutting-edge drone of America down from their airspace, you know, as soon as it enters Iran. You know, this is where it has gotten, right? You look at their satellites, you look at their nanotechnology, all of it, right? Why? Because they made a right choice when they were presented with that choice. The rest of the world is yet to come on board the way they should have.
And I would like to point out, Sheikh Ali, that when the Islamic Revolution was initially, you know, the initial sparks were taking place, the slogans of Imam Khomeini were picked up by Muslims across the Muslim world, in Iraq, in even the Hejaz, in other Muslim countries as well. They were also chanting death to America.
Yes, yes.
They were also, you know, chiming those same sentiments.
Yeah, one of the great observations, if you go back in time, when the Islamic Revolution came, right at that time, if you look at Pakistan, for instance, right, which is a neighboring country to Iran, the slogan of death to America was one of the, and it today is too, but I'm talking 40 years ago, when nobody else was on board. Dr. Muhammad Ali Naqvi, he's a shaheed, he's a martyr, he raised that slogan, and the youths of Pakistan were recognizing who the enemy of humanity is, who the enemy of this region is, and who the enemy of Muslim nations is. So they were chanting death to America back in the day. I'm talking like 1979, right? They were chanting it. So absolutely right, spot on.
So, and you can actually tell that from that point, the amount of propaganda that has increased against particularly Shiism and Iran, like even in the last 10 years, if you compare it to the 30 years before that, it has significantly increased.
Right, and there's a reason for that, right? So the revolution was introduced. Imam Khomeini said, okay, this is a new path. This is that third option that I talked about. So it disturbed the equation of the status quo. Now, America was hoping that this revolution that has come about just recently, it is going to fall apart. Why? Because these scholars, these Islamic scholars, these fuqaha, they don't know how to run a country.
Yeah.
You need experience. You need to have, like, proper literature. You need to have, like, they don't know a jack, right? So they're going to fall.
They said, give
they're
it a few,
collapse.
Give it a week.
Yes.
Then they said,
so
give
this
it a
is
month.
Where they started, right? They said that by tomorrow evening, that system is going to fall. The system of the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic Republic. The new, fresh-born Islamic Republic. An infant, a baby, right? It didn't happen. Then they're like, okay, give it a week. Then, and these are the official statements, by the way. We're not just making it up. These are the official statements of the officials of the United States of America at that time, namely Carter and his administration. And then they're like, give it a week. Then they're like, give it a month. Then they're like, okay, by next, you know, I don't know, Christmas, next summer. They're still doing it. You know, the most recent thing was with the Munafiqeen Khalq, the MKO, they call themselves Mujahideen Khalq, housed in the West because they escaped Iran after getting proper beating, and they went in hiding, and the refuge of MKO turned out to be the West, right? Naturally. So the most recent is, I believe in 2019, it was said, or 2018, 19, I think it is, right? John Bolton on MKO conference, he comes out in public and he said that we've got all the groundwork done. This Christmas, this year's Christmas, we are going to have in Tehran, right?
Yeah, I remember that now. Now,
this has been on their wish list from day one of the revolution, right? They work towards it, and they're still hoping for it, right? Then they said, this year, Iran is going to have a hot summer, right? It was an official statement by the United States of America, right? Which means there are going to be riots, and there are going to be, like, disturbance, civil disobedience, and people are going to stand up against the system and the government and the leadership, and they're going to do a coup, in other words, right? This is what the statement meant. Guess what? Allah turned it around for them. Now, America not only had a hot summer, but a very cold winter as well. You're looking at Capitol Hill as we speak, right? People are storming in. People are burning things. Policemen are being shot. And there are, like, mass protests throughout the United States of America. I was looking at a chart where they said what roads of Washington are blocked.
Wow.
Literally, they had, like, red dot on every alley. This is what you call a curfew. right? Mm. But the world, of course, is not going to talk about it because the mainstream media, as you pointed out, is in the hands of these oppressive powers. They are funding it. They're controlling it. They're threatening the journalists, anybody who is genuine, who is, you know, who comes out and speaks up the truth. They are given a shut-up call by just, you know, firing them from job and stuff. So you're not going to see much of it in the mainstream media, but the world knows it. The world is seeing it, right? Those who are informed, they are seeing it. So alhamdulillah, you know, Iran is standing tall and America is collapsing. The regime is, this administration is on its way out, but the regime is collapsing. This pharaonic regime is collapsing. And this is a good news for all those justice seekers and the oppressed around the globe.
Syed Mahdi, why is Iran always at the top of their list of things to talk about?
One of the reasons that they, you know, have decided to attack Iran, to attack the Islamic Republic, and the reason that it's at the top of their list, one of them is, like we had said, that it presents the Islamic model. It presents the most accurate, the most perfect, the clearest manifestation of the Islamic model, right? The Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution is based upon Islam, pure Mohammedan Islam. And so it is in reality the purest Islamic model that can be seen out there. So you see a lot of, you know, so-called governments out there who claim to be Islamic or Muslim governments when in reality they are not following this pure Islamic model. And this is why they're failing in a lot of their aspects. And so if we say that this is an Islamic model, Islam is the design for the perfection of the world, right? The Islamic model is the design for the perfection of the world. It was given to humanity by Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted, via the infallible messenger of Allah. And it has been protected by the infallible imams and the ulama, the religious scholars that we have. So this Islamic model, you ask, is that what does this Islamic model stand for? And again, it is because of all these reasons that they are attacking and the Islamic Republic is at the top of their list. Islam stands for independence and freedom, self-determination, equality, justice, truth, prosperity, material and spiritual benefits, social justice, economic justice, ridding the world of discrimination and racism and prejudice. These are all the things, and these are just some of the things which Islam stands for and Islam wants to promote. These are universal values. These aren't values which are specific to any country or any tribe or any ethnicity. All of humanity believes in these values and wants to implement these values. And these are Islamic values, of course. And in today's time, you see that people are looking towards Islam. And Islam, in the manifestation of the Islamic Republic, this model, this system, and the Islamic Republic is showing this new model to the world, this perfect model, which can do better than any and all of these other flawed and broken systems which are prevalent in the world today. And so this is why they are attacking the Islamic Republic of Iran.
I mean,
among
that makes
many
sense
reasons.
Because they have their own ideas of what justice and freedom and independence actually are. I mean, obviously, America's ideas of all these things are all not only flawed, but they're actually, you know, they backfire against themselves. So in the name of democracy, they kill democratic leaders. In the name of freedom, they steal the freedom of people in their own country and abroad as well. In the name of, I don't know, independence, they have made every other country dependent on them.
Right.
And upon their system. So if there's another country out there which is, you know, screaming out and saying that there is actually another way of looking at all of these things, and that is the right way, no wonder why they're being targeted through the mainstream media.
And that's what it is, right? This Islamic model, this Islamic revolution, the Islamic Republic is presenting a model, is presenting the, not, I don't want to say alternative, because I think that they are the alternative. This is the default. This is the true path, right? The same path that, for example, Jesus was showing to the people, or Moses was showing to the people, or Abraham was showing to the people. This is the same path, the path that Allah, God, the Almighty, the Exalted, has set out for mankind, right? This is the default. And if it were to be implemented, all of these values in their correct sense would be implemented upon the earth. But the alternative came, and, you know, threw everything off course. The pharaohs of the time, the Nimruds of the time, the oppressors of the time, the tyrants of the time, they came up with their own systems, you know, whether it's, Western liberal democracy, or it's communism, or it's Marxism, or it's free market capitalism, and it has taken humanity off the straight path, the Sirat al-Mustaqim of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's all we have time for today. You can find us at www.pasttoday.com/EN. That's the Call of Islam page. From myself, from Sayyid Mehdi, and from Sheikh Ali, we bid you Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Please, don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
You. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Rabbana, Rabbana.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
Rabbana, Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Hayyu, ya Qayyum.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be looking at a very important question, and that is the question regarding monotheism and worship. Monotheism in worship means that we should only worship God, and we shouldn't worship and do ibadat of any other being besides Him. Unfortunately, this has become a very important and significant point of contention between the various Islamic schools of thought that exist today. A lot of Islamic schools of thought accuse other sects within Islam of being polytheists and worshipping beings besides God. Or to use Islamic terminology, they accuse them of being mushrik and of performing shirk. So we have to ask the following question and answer it. What exactly do we mean by monotheism in worship, or tawheed fil ibadat? What do we mean by worship? We need to delineate and answer this question in order to understand what exactly polytheism in worship implies and what is monotheism in worship. In order to answer this question, we can say this, that in lexically, the word ibadat in Arabic means to be humble before somebody. It's possible for somebody to say this, that when God has ordered us to only worship Him, it means that He's ordered us to only be humble towards Him. Now, because other people who follow certain sects within Islam humble themselves before other beings, right, such as the imams, for example, alayhim assalam, this means that they are polytheists in their worship, and they are mushriks. The answer to this question is that this possibility is wrong and it's incorrect. Why? Because we see that in the Holy Quran, God has ordered us to humble ourselves before certain beings. For example, God has ordered us to be humble towards our parents. Now, for example, in Surah Isra, verse 24, God says, وَخْفِزْ لَهُمَا جَنَاهَ الزُّلِّ مِنَ الرَّحْمَةِ وَقُلْ رَبِّ رَحَمْهُمَا كَمَا رَبَّيَانِي صَغِيرًا. That God orders us to be humble towards our parents and to pray for them in this verse. If ibadat in worship and meant to be humble simply towards God, hope God would be ordering us towards shirk in this verse, which is clearly wrong. Also, in the story of Adam alayhi salam, the Prophet Adam alayhi salam, God ordered the malaika, the angels, to prostrate towards him. Prostration is an act of humility. Prostration is an act of humility. It displays the humility of the person prostrating towards the object that it's prostrating towards. If monotheism in worship meant to simply be humble towards God, this would mean that in this story, God would have ordered the angels to perform polytheism in worship, which is clearly wrong. Or for example, in Surah Yusuf, Hazrat Yusuf, the Prophet Yusuf, alayhi salam, his parents and his brothers, they all prostrated towards him. وَخَرُّوا لَهُ سُجَّدًا. In other words, they humbled themselves before him. Obviously, and Hazrat Yusuf, the Prophet Yusuf, didn't prohibit them from doing so. So this clearly, it means that it was okay. So humbling oneself before beings other than God is not an act of polytheism. Thank you for joining us here today on The Key. We were looking at monotheism in worship and what it implies. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is the way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagian.
Imam al-Baqir, salawatullah wa salamuhu alayhi, is known, his name is actually Muhammad ibn Ali ibn al-Husayn. Yet he is known as Baqir, Baqirul ilmi ba'da al-Nabi, or Baqirul ilmi al-Nabiyyin, the one who split the seed of knowledge after the Prophet, or split the seed of the knowledge of Prophets. He opened it up. During his time, because of the work, the efforts of the Ahlul Bayt, because of the efforts of Imam al-Husayn, because of the efforts of Imam Zainul Abideen, and the efforts of Imam al-Baqir, they reached a point where Imam al-Baqir was able to have sessions that multiple people attended from the Muslim community. And not only that, they started a whole movement reviving the sciences, the knowledge, the understanding, the teachings, the sunnah of the Prophet. In other words, there's a wrong perception, a wrong understanding that is there in regards to Imam al-Baqir and Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayhima, we know, everybody knows, during that time, there's a lot of hadith. If you pick up books of hadith, most of the ahadith you're going to come across are either qala al-Sadiq or qala al-Baqir salamullah alayhima. So that means they had an opportunity where they were speaking more, and more people were writing down and listening to these imams. You will find their ahadith, at least as narrators of the hadith of the Holy Prophet, in books of those who didn't believe in those imams as being imams. You'll find it. They recorded their words, their sayings. Imam al-Sadiq and Imam al-Baqir, these two imams. This is something that's pretty well known. The mistake that is made, the wrong understanding that needs to be corrected, is that the way it's said is this way, that Imam al-Baqir and Imam al-Sadiq lived at a time that the Umayyads were weak and the Abbasids had not picked up, therefore they got an opportunity to express themselves. This is the common saying that we've heard. Even ulama mentioned this, non-ulama mentioned this, probably hearing it from ulama. It is clear to us that this is an inaccurate statement. What this suggests is that Imam Zain al-Abidin was just sitting there. He didn't get the opportunity, he didn't say anything, he didn't do anything. Imam al-Baqir suddenly came across an opportunity like, oh, we're able to speak, now we're going to go and speak. Imam al-Sadiq continued that, and then afterwards, Imam al-Kadhim had a difficult time right from the beginning, therefore he stopped speaking, so they went quiet again. The rest of the imams did not speak out. It was an opportunity that was created. They had nothing to do with it. They were not involved in it. And they simply took advantage of the circumstances that were there. That is an inaccurate statement. The accurate picture of that period is that Imam al-Husayn's revolution affected the Umayyads. Imam Zain al-Abidin continued with the revolution of Imam al-Husayn. They worked against the system. They started training people. Imam Zain al-Abidin did. He started this process with all the difficulties that were there. The movement of reviving the knowledge of the Prophet, the tafsir of the Quran, the sunnah of the Prophet, the sayings of the Prophet, because you know that was something that was banned, they weren't. And with the direction that the Umayyads especially now were taking, it should have come to a point where what you have of the Prophet is only nonsense, a whole bunch of fabrications, a wrong depiction of that Prophet. It's not about us as Shia having the book Wasa'il al-Shia today, or prior to that, Al-Kafi in Man La Yahduruhu Al-Faqih, or Tahdhib al-Ahkam, or Al-Istibsar, or the other books of hadith that we have. It's not about us having a Zurara as the student of Imam al-Sadiq and Imam al-Baqir salamullah alayhima, that gathered the sayings of Imam al-Sadiq and Imam al-Baqir. The movement of recording the sayings of the Prophet, finding whatever's out there, filtering it. That means he filtered, and that's what he says. If you look at the terminology of scholars, Sunni scholars, they say this hadith is sahih according to the criteria of Muslim or the criteria of Bukhari. Based on their definition of what a sahih hadith is, this hadith is sahih. or that hadith is sahih, or this hadith is not. Who created this process in the Muslim Ummah for people to start studying what the Prophet has said, start filtering out Israiliyat, start filtering out what is not accurate? It's Imam Zain al-Abidin, Imam al-Baqir, Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayhim ajma'in. If you look at the students and those who were affected by this movement, there are multiple people that are affected by this movement. Some directly attending sessions, listening to Imam al-Baqir, or the students of Imam Zain al-Abidin. It started getting big. That wasn't there. There was another movement going on by the Umayyads. One that, especially after the Imams started this movement, the Umayyads tried to marginalize it, tried to hijack it, tried to deviate it. There's a student, Imam Zain al-Abidin has, if I get his name fully accurately, Ibn Shihab al-Zuhri. Az-Zuhri is a student of Imam Zain al-Abidin. A student of Imam Zain al-Abidin, taught by Imam Zain al-Abidin, the Sunnah of the Prophet, Tafsir of the Quran, history, whatever, there's lots of stuff he learns. The Umayyads buy him. They employ him. Employ him to do what? To give out sayings of the Prophet, teachings of Islam, tafsir of the Quran, that would support the Umayyads. There's harsh words that Imam Zain al-Abidin has against Az-Zuhri after he went in that direction. The Imam started a movement to bring the Ummah back to the teachings of the Prophet. The Umayyads started a different one. Let me not sidetrack too much. There's a different things that happened there. The primary thing, the most important thing that I'm focusing on here, is to suggest that it wasn't such that the Imam just found this opportunity. They were sitting back at home doing nothing and they're like, okay, now we can speak. They're not going to kill us. You go and speak. That's not what Imam al-Baqir did. That's not who he was. That's not Imam Zain al-Abidin. That's not Imam al-Sadiq. That's not any of the Imams. They created that opportunity by educating the masses, by getting the word of Allah out, explaining the verses of the Quran in so many different ways. Recite salawat, please. So, one of the things that we can take from this already up to this point is that the ability to get the word of Allah out, the tafsir of the Quran out, the sunnah of the Prophet out, was itself a struggle. Being able to express that was a struggle. Secondly, expressing the sunnah of the Prophet, explaining the tafsir of the Quran, was also a struggle itself. It was a jihad. Imam al-Baqir would speak and he would explain the Quran. This was jihad. What does a jihad mean? It means that with those sessions, with the explanations of the Quran and the Sunnah, he is fighting the Umayyads.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah. Today's great tip: what are the blessings of the congregational prayers as far as our ubudiyyah, our servitude of Allah? So, dear listeners, talking about congregational prayers, Salatul Jama'at, this prayers which is done, this act of worship which is done in unison, in unity, together with other Muslims, at the same time, in the same place, truly enhances our ubudiyya. It enhances our servitude of Allah, because this congregational prayers has so many spiritual benefits, it has so many worldly benefits, and it has a lot of practical implementations and implications which really do enhance our servitude of Allah, and not just in an individual manner, but in a collective manner as well. Now, we find that in congregational prayers, individuals stand in a single row, coming together to create unity in individuality. This in itself is a very beautiful aspect, where individuals are individually serving Allah, the Exalted, the Mighty, but they have come together and individually, all together, one plus the other, makes a collective which is in servitude of Allah. And so, as we said in previous programs, it is this individual who comes and becomes part of a collective which multiplies the rewards multiple exponential times for this congregational prayers. And so individuals, they stand in a single row. They set aside all distinctions of position, of status. There is no race or language which differentiates one another. There is no distinction between wealth and job status or financial status or economic background. There is no distinction of gender or nationality or ethnicity or color. All have come equal in the eyes of Allah. All have come equal to stand next to one another. There is no separate place for a wealthy person and no separate place for a poor person. All have come in this congregational prayers to stand in front of Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted. All have come together, despite where they have come from, to stand in unity, to be as one collective in their servitude and their ubudiyah of Allah in these congregational prayers.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to this segment of the program, Foresight. My name is Muhammad, and today I'm going to read to you the English translation of an excerpt from Munajatul Mu'tasimin. Please stay with me. God, O shelter of the shelter seekers, O refuge of the refuge seekers, O deliverer of the perishing. If I seek not refuge in your might, in whom shall I seek refuge? If I seek not shelter in your power, in whom shall I seek shelter? Sins have made me seek asylum in laying hold on the skirts of your pardon. Offenses have compelled me to beg the opening of the doors of your forgiveness. Evildoing has summoned me to dismount in the courtyard of your might. Fear of your vengeance has prompted me to cling to the handhold of your tenderness. It is not right for him who holds fast to your cord to be abandoned, nor proper for him who seeks the sanctuary of your might to be surrendered or disregarded.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. In continuation to what we were saying regarding congregational prayers and how it enhances our servitude of Allah, we just talked about how it's in this congregational prayers that an individual comes, he joins and becomes a collective, and so the individual servitude of Allah turns into this beautiful manifestation of a collective servitude of Allah. We also find, dear friends, in this congregational prayers that there is a purity and sincerity of affection which is created toward fellow human beings. Of course, when we come together and we ask about each other's conditions, we ask about each other's problems, we ask about each other's happiness and sadness, we try to help solve one another's problems, we try to cheer each other up. This truly creates a purity and a sincerity in our affection towards human beings, towards Muslims, towards one another. Truly, is this not what Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted, the Most Quick to Forgive, the Greatest One who loves every single one of us, is this not what Allah wants for humanity? Allah wants humanity to be affectionate towards one another. And truly, one of the forms of servitude of Allah is when humanity begins to treat each other fairly and with respect and with kindness and with mercy. And one of the ways, again, dear friends, in which we can enhance this form of servitude to Allah, enhance this form of ubudiyya is via the congregational prayers, which, as said, helps to increase the purity and the sincerity of the affection towards human beings.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Amin Rastani.
How do I gain closeness to Allah? Let's do three verses of the Quran. The first verse, Surah Yasin, verse 61. وَأَنِعْبُدُونِي هَذَا صِرَاطٌ مُسْتَقِيمٌ. Serve me, obey me. This is the Sirat al-Mustaqim. This verse is saying the straight path has to do with servitude. Servitude equals straight path. If you want to get to Allah, you have to be on Sirat al-Mustaqim. So, spirituality has criteria. The criterion is ubuduni, ubudiyya, servitude, nothing else. Next verse, Surah Dhariyat, verse 56. وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسِ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. I created jinn and man only for one purpose. لِيَعْبُدُونَ. This is what it is. Your purpose was to come back to me. إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. Here he's saying عُبُودِيَّة is the purpose. What does that mean? That means عُبُودِيَّة is going to get you there. When you serve Allah, the capacity grows. The more obedience, the more capacity to gain, to receive the light from Him. Third verse, Surah Hujurat, verse 13. يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ إِنَّا خَلَقْنَاكُمْ مِنْ ذَكَرٍ وَأُنْثَى وَجَعَلْنَاكُمْ شُعُوبًا وَقَبَائِلَ لِتَعَارَفُوا إِنَّ أَكْرَمَكُمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ أَتْقَاكُمْ. In this verse, Allah says, we created you from male and female. I created you man and woman. I created you different tribes, different branches of peoples, so you get to know each other, you can identify each other. But inna akramakum indallah atqakum. The most high of you, atqakum, the one who obeys me more, the one who has more taqwa. Taqwa means obedience of Allah. Spirituality equals obedience. What hinders spirituality is disobedience. Very simple. That's our principle.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we've been talking about the blessings and the secrets of congregational prayers in enhancing our servitude of Allah. We talked about how individuals come and they become part of a collective, and it is the individual in the collective which is in servitude of Allah in a most beautiful form of ubudiyya. We talked about how there's no distinction between race or status, financial position, nationality or gender, ethnicity or language or race or color when it comes to congregational prayers. It is truly a beautiful manifestation of unity without barriers. We also talked about how the congregational prayers increases our purity and sincerity in our affection, our love, our kindness, our mercy, not just towards Muslims, but towards fellow human beings as well. And we talked about how this affection for humanity is one of the forms of servitude of Allah. In this segment, we just talk about a couple of more things. We find that this very congregational prayer, it effaces,
it reduces the spirit of selfishness, the spirit of individualism, where everything is self-centered and everything is about me. No, everything is not about me. We must take into consideration each other as well. It also effaces the spirit of isolation and not wanting to be with other people, to be reclusive. No, we must be in society. We must interact with society and with people. And also, it endangers a sense of struggle against arrogance and selfishness, meaning we are able to struggle against vices such as arrogance and selfishness. Meaning it is this congregational prayer, this spirit of being part of a whole, which tends to erode our arrogance and it erodes our selfishness, our self-centeredness. And finally, congregational prayers teaches us unity of expression, unity in direction, unity in objective, and unity in leadership. Very beautiful, vast, and amazing ocean is this thing called congregational prayers. And truly this vast ocean called congregational prayers has beautiful and spiritual effects upon our servitude of Allah, our ubudiyah of Allah. And as we have said in our previous programs, if for some reason it is difficult for us to go to the masjid, to go to the mosque for our congregational prayers, it is quite easy for us to do these congregational prayers even in our very own homes with our very own families. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, we send our peace and blessings upon all the prophets of Allah, Subhanahu wa Taala. And especially the last of them, Muhammad al-Mustafa and his progeny, and those companions who followed their path. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, and welcome to another program of For a Better Life, here on IRIB English Radio. We were talking about the psychological diseases that we might have within us and in our society, the culture that we live in, the modern society with its ideology of modernism and postmodernism, where we are in pursuit of happiness. And as we mentioned in the previous program, there is nothing called the pursuit of happiness. Happiness should be right here and now. And we talked about materialism, and that people never ever feel satisfied with the greed they have. This carnal soul will always want more and more and more, and you will never be satisfied. And we also talked about the financial issues that you and I might have, and 1 million obstacles that we might try to solve, and that will have its effect on our nerves, on our mentality, on our physical body. Our mental health affects our physical body. One becomes constantly listless as a result of financial insecurity. Some are so full of obstacles and issues about certain particulars that they tired and exhausted everyone and everything about themselves. Such persons, as a matter of principle, are those whose anxiety seeks an outlet in order to surface. And they are constantly after some fresh start, or lamenting and complaining all the time, being negative all the time, constantly giving this poisonous energy to others and to themselves. So when our mental health is not correct, our physical health would not be correct. They are interlinked to each other. Problems of life take a specially fearsome aspect in the evenings for the fatigue resulting from a day's work draws a curtain over the intellect and suppresses its power of rational judgment. At such times, it no longer possesses its usual vigor, whereas the power of imagination is still active, dear brothers and sisters. Finding the arena empty without a rival, and thus the imagination starts to play its role when we sleep, tormenting the person severely about future problems that had not yet arrived. If misgivings and futile apprehensions were to occur to anyone as a result of some small mistake, he should know that something that shouldn't have happened has taken place, and there is no use in getting troubled about it. Moreover, he has no right to complain about what he had to suffer as a result of his own act. Everyone must reap what he has sown. And if he has sowed a bad seed, who is to blame? If one becomes upset by his own mistake and sees its consequences to be much graver than they really are, he would fail to make amends, for that would divide his attention.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor, 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
That which is certain, dear brothers and sisters, is that one cannot succeed in solving one's problems with agitation, with anxiety. For agitation does not increase the capacity of one who has made a mistake. And regret and sorrow cannot change what is past. Thus, learn from the past. Use it for today's life. Use it for today's daily activities. But do not go back to the past. And do not think about future problems. Have goals, but do not reflect and try to solve issues that have not yet come. Try to not prejudge things. The only result that one obtains from his or her gloomy thoughts is to make his life gloomy and paralyze his or her activity. When you think like that, when you think negatively, negativity will come to you. When you give this poison to your own body, it will affect you physically and mentally. And also peace of mind is necessary for one who, and also peace of mind is necessary for one to disentangle the issues through reflection and then try not to repeat those mistakes. It is by correct reasoning, dear brothers and sisters, that man can bring a discipline in his moral conduct. Thus, too much concern for the unknown future will not help us. the extent of attention that one directs to the future or the present greatly affects one's spiritual well-being. As you can see, there is a connection between the physical body, the physical health, the mental health, and